The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince and I and a guest go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We are the only podcast that has ever done this idea, and we thank you for listening to us, although you have no options in Sopranos podcasts because none others exist. None of them exist. I am very excited for today's episode, not only because it is one of my personal favorites, but also for this episode of our podcast, because our guest is a homie of mine. She's a comedian. You know her from Good Mythical Morning. Everyone, please welcome Emily Fleming. How you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. Today
yeah.
is probably the worst day so far, just about.
Oh, no. Stuff.
But this is really making me feel better, actually. I was very frustrated with the Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
I hate the Zoom.
Yeah, it's hell.
Meetings.
Yeah, this is life now. Life is now just various scheduled Zoom meetings. I've actually never been so organized with my podcasting or social life.
Yeah,
as
I
have
use my calendar app now. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. I calendar everything. I have a fucking Zoom Passover Seder this weekend, and I'm like, this sounds
Jesus.
Like actual hell and suffering, but that's kind of the point of Passover, is you celebrate you celebrate the suffering of Jews.
Do you think that Bernie Sanders worse. Dropped out of the race on Passover, like, just to add insult to injury?
Yeah
Wait, he dropped out.
He just dropped out today. He did. I know it's my heart hurts for myself.
Was it because of Larry David?
Yeah, what? Yeah, it's because Larry David said, he got to drop out. And then he gave a bunch of money to Pete Buttigieg or some shit.
He kind of softly endorsed Joe Biden.
Oh, gross. It's that kind of Jew-on-Jew hate crime that just makes me hate politics.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
But the thing is, it was more of like he's just not going to win.
Yeah, that's how a Jew does an endorsement. A Jewish endorsement is. That's how
he was.
That's
like,
how we
I
do
support
endorsements.
Him. He said he supported him since the beginning, and
exactly that was literally
he's not gonna win. So,
Good news is, we're the only Sopranos podcast in a pandemic, and thus we can start
that's
gouging
right.
people. They're gonna have to stock up on Pod Yourself a Gun episodes.
Absolutely.
You know, they're gonna start hoarding our podcast, so that's good.
Like they hoard toilet paper.
That's
and
right.
The other good news is that Emily, we get to play you and all the listeners once again the theme song.
Pod yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen
pod. Pod.
You got to burn the shine. But you're born to a
podcast. Pod. Podcast. The wonderful thing about doing this podcast on Zoom is, because in person it's great, but also seeing people's faces during during the theme song just fills my heart with joy. I wish everyone out in the podcast land could actually see it. But no, it's just for me. All right, let's talk about it. Today we are talking about From Season 2, Episode 9, From Where to Eternity. Vince, why don't you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Oh, I will. Christopher has an out-of-body experience that spooks Polly to no end. Carmela urges Tony to have a vasectomy. Visiting her own psychiatrist, Melfi reveals the unholy alliance she's made with Tony, as well as her growing dependence on pills and alcohol.
All right. Great synopsis, except for the very last sentence reveals a storyline that I thought was, low-key useless, but all the other ones are great. Before we delve into it, let's talk about the context. What was happening in the world when this episode aired? Vince, it's time for you to take us on a little trip back into the Wayback Machine.
That's right. So this episode, From Where to Eternity, it premiered March 12, 2000. It was a Sunday. Some of the headlines, Wall Street guru Buffett, sorry for his stocks plunge. That was from the Boston Globe. I believe it's loading. Oh, there we go. Billionaire stock market guru Warren Buffett apologized yesterday for how his company's earnings and stock price plunged last year when the boom on Wall Street turned even amateur investors into millionaires. So he's gonna lose his shirt. I think he's gonna,
that Warren Buffett guy is done.
Yeah,
he's not gonna be a billionaire any longer. What a weird headline. Did he apologize?
The whole headline?
Well, his stock fell 20%. They lost Berkshire Hathaway lost 42% of its value in 1999, apparently. It's good to know with the benefit of hindsight that he landed on his feet.
Yeah. If there's one thing I'm glad about from the financial problems of the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm glad Warren Buffett still is a billionaire. You know,
he's
one of those guys that it's like, yeah, just take the money, dude. You seem nice. What else was going on, dude?
The Boston Globe is also handicapping who's going to become the Veeps, because at this point, the nominees are basically decided. It's going to be Bush versus Gore. The headline is now the Veep stakes, and they have the top three candidates for Veep among the Republicans. That was Tom Ridge, governor of Pennsylvania, Chuck Hagel from Nebraska, senator, and Elizabeth Dole, former president of Red Cross.
Is that like Bob Dole's daughter or some shit?
I think it's his wife.
What if she's from the canned pineapple fortune?
Yeah, that's true. She could be of the pineapple dolls or the banana dolls. Who, by the way,
no, she's part of the pencil dolls. I believe she's actually Bob Dole's wife.
No, but like the dolls, Dole is like one of those fruit companies that like ravaged Latin America. It made that's like where the term, I believe it's where the term Banana Republic came from, was literally just an entire economy based on like slave labor for bananas. Anyways, it's a little bit of Dole knowledge that
they're like work casual pants. They're so good.
Yeah, they're great pants. I love
a
good banana.
Where will I go?
It's so stupid.
On the Democratic side, the top three candidates, according to the Boston Globe, were former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin.
Uh-huh.
Pros, Mr. Economic Prosperity. Cons, has never run for office. There was Dianne Feinstein, Senator from California. Mm-hmm. From Key
cool.
State, attracts women. And then Evan Bay, U.S. Senator from Indiana. I don't know what happened to him.
Sick.
Probably some sort of scandal or something. I don't know. Who cares? He's from
or
Indiana.
Or he was just like, ew, Indiana, boring.
Yeah. He was just like, I have bigger dreams. I got to say, the Wayback Machine, when it first started, I felt like it was one headline and then one movie. You're reading the entire paper now.
Well,
now
I got to give you the cultural context over here.
You got to know. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
it's very... I'm giving cultural context over here.
Hey. All right.
Top movies. Mission to Mars. Ninth Gate. My Dog Skip.
Those are great movies.
Yeah, top
songs. What are
songs?
The top songs?
There was Say My Name by Destiny's Child.
Mm.
In country, there was How Do You Like Me Now by Toby Keith. And I feel like Toby Keith's entire career is just based on putting music to common phrases, like obnoxious phrases.
No, it's all about him sticking it to somebody. That's like his thing. He's like, how do you like me now? You didn't like me before. Now you probably still don't like me, but I got a guitar. And that's like, we'll
I learned some
boot
chords.
In the end. And like, it's like literally no one likes you still.
Yeah, what's kind of amazing about it is that like 9/11 really made it so that they were like, finally, I can direct this anger at someone.
Yeah,
they were
I can direct my anger at women towards Arabs.
Yeah, yeah. They spent like about 8 years just being like, how do you like me now, Osama? And then they a few years later, they were like, how you like me now, Obama? And it's like, you know.
I mean,
Osama was like the in bed of country music. You just add it to whatever the end of whatever they're singing.
Yeah.
I want to talk about me, Osama.
Yeah.
I remember that shitty song.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
The devil went down to Georgia.
That's
Osama.
Not him. That's Charlie Daniels.
No, I know. I'm just thinking of country songs. I don't know many.
That's the only country song that like Yankees know.
It is. It is true.
And just kind of go, yeah, devil went down to Georgia. I know what country music is. Say hi to Danny. Hey, Danny, what you getting from the fridge? Oh, he's got headphones on too because I'm talking real loud.
Oh, that's sick. That's sick. Well, when he gets his headphones off, you know, tell him I said hi. Tell him I said what's up.
We watched the episode together, actually. We had a good time.
Oh, nice.
But he did tell me that back when he used to watch The Sopranos, he had a problem with shoplifting. Because the
Wait, what?
Because the show makes you want to be bad. Like,
oh, sure.
So that's why. Wait. Hold on.
There's like a lot of dudes that say that when they watch The Sopranos, it made them want to do bad stuff.
It made them want to do crimes?
Like little fun. Like crimes. Like little stuff.
That's such a weird reaction. I mean, I guess I get it a little bit. When I was watching The Sopranos, I guess I was doing crimes. I was doing a lot of drugs. But I feel like I was doing drugs.
Well,
either
there you
way.
Go. It's all coming together.
Yeah, I guess.
I was trying really hard to have a gumad, but then I realized you had to have like an actual significant other first. At the time.
When you're dating,
and I did not have that at the time.
You can just consider everyone your gumar, you know, when you're
What's
when
a
you're
gumar?
Single. A gumar is it's a girlfriend mistress. On the side. Yeah. It's your mistress.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why. Oh, we'll get into it, I guess.
We'll get into it. And so now, after taking a little trip into the Wayback Machine, you know, we saw that apparently Warren Buffett was losing money. They were trying to find a Veep, and people were really enjoying the movie My Dog Skip.
Uh-huh.
Well, now let's talk about this episode. And first, let me just break you off a little bit of the Bada B stories. Here's what was going on in this episode. Number one, Richie Aprile is searching for Matthew Bevilacqua. He's hiding somewhere. Chris has a vision of hell. Polly is freaking out over that vision. Pussy suspects that Tony suspects. Carm wants Tony to get snipped, and Melfi pushes too far. So those are the basic storylines of the episode.
Yeah, we're picking up right where the last one left off. Chris got shot in an attempted whacking by Matt Bevilacqua and Sean Gismonti. They tried to whack him off. And they were unsuccessful.
Yeah.
They shot his spleen up.
He tried to
whack him off right in the street.
Yeah, yeah. He just saw, you know, Chris in the street and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to whack him off, you know? I'm gonna suck his... I'm sorry. Now I've gone too far. So that did not end well. You know, Sean ended up, you know, getting a load right in his face, if you know what I mean.
That's true, yeah.
He got shot in the head. Meanwhile, Matthew Bevilacqua runs away from this failed assassination attempt, and he runs into Richie, and Richie basically chases him off with a baseball bat and is like, get the fuck out of here. So now it is this episode.
He told him to skedaddle. He's like, skedaddle.
Yeah, yeah. He said, I don't want any malarkey over here. And so right now, Matthew Bevilacqua is in hiding, and Chris is in the hospital fighting for his life. Yeah. And this is the Chris storyline is interesting. It's for the most part just him recovering in the hospital. But the first thing I want to ask is
we should point out that this episode was written by Michael Imperioli.
Oh, that is an important point. And I got to say that Michael Imperioli, although he plays a dumb mafioso who's not very creative and a shitty writer on the show, in real life, ended up writing one of my absolute favorite episodes of The Sopranos. This is one of my favorites, Vince. What did you think about the episode?
I liked it, though I do wonder. So the trivia for this episode, Michael Imperioli says the idea of Christopher's experiences in this episode came from a spec script he had written between the first and second seasons about Christopher overdosing on drugs and having an afterlife experience. When he talked to showrunner David Chase about this, Chase said that Christopher would get shot in the second season and the afterlife part could be added to the story, which, and this episode's good, but it does make me wonder if that's why we had such a shitty episode before this, because like they had this storyline already going and they had to like rush their way into it.
Yeah. So you're saying that you think that it was they, but then they would have had to have created the entire Matthew Bevilacqua storyline, I imagine, with the idea that he and Sean Gismonti would shoot Chris. And so I feel like that came first. And I got to say, to me, that sounds like proof that, once again, Michael Imperioli is a really good writer, because his idea of having Chris Moltisanti overdose and have this all happen is actually better. I think a better story than just him getting shot was like, oh no, but you know, it seems like it served the purpose of getting rid of these two idiot characters, Matthew and Sean.
I kind of thought this was one just long drawn out commercial for Diet Fanta.
That's true. This was definitely sponsored by
honestly, it made me kind of want one.
it did. Yeah. As he was drinking the Fanta, Matthew Bevilacqua's last drink is a Diet Fanta. I was just thinking, wanna Fanta? Don't you wanna Fanta?
I mean, he even asked, do you want a Fanta? So
yeah. And he's like, don't I want a Fanta? Don't I? Like, by the way, that scene let's get this scene out of the way. And in fact, this storyline out of the way of them finding Matthew Bevilacqua. I say let's get out of the way because to me, it's the least interesting thing in the story. But that scene where they find him and Tony and Big Pussy question him and then kill him, it's one of those like Sopranos moments where you're just like, this is a really, I thought it was a really good show. I just thought I was like, yeah.
Sorry. I just wanted to comment that I've seen, I think almost everything I've watched since in quarantine involves someone being so scared that they peed themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's such a cliche in like in movies and television where it's like, this guy's really scared. How are you going to show it? Because he's a man.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell if a man's scared.
he also called for his mommy, which is another fun thing that they
always do. That's fucking great. That, yeah. I liked that the best out of all of it.
Yeah.
But the piss down the jeans thing, there's so many movies that do it. And it's always a close up on like their shoe.
Yeah.
Thing. And it's like, give me that crotch shot, baby.
Yeah.
Every time I piss, it just like stays in the front of my jeans. It doesn't go all the way down.
It goes straight to the back of my jeans. So it looks like I shit myself.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is an important point, too. I think that I think it's more likely what they need to do, like the brave thing, is like show him just taking a mad dump, you know, like show him like just like farting his ass off he's screaming.
There are movies and TV that do that, but instead it's another person going, "Ugh, did you?"
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
It's like, but that's, you don't get to see the shit in the pants.
I know. To me, that's too Greek tragedy, where all of the drama happens off screen. I want to see like the shit roll out of the butthole and down the pant leg and just like little dude.
Yeah,
just
shit,
little
dude. Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah.
I want to see it. I want to see the shit roll downhill. But also, they couldn't have done that.
I want to hear it. I want. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I just want to hear that metal chair farts. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're sitting on a chair.
The problem was they already used the someone has the nervous shits in the last episode. And it was Jizz Monty who would, you know, he had to take a dump when they're robbing safes. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. They were like, hey, we can't do too much shit. We got to have him piss himself.
Yeah.
There's something really effective, I think, about pissing yourself for me because I it's like. It is definitely cliche, but I can't imagine being, I have a shy bladder. I can't take a piss when I'm like if I'm in a stall and there's a guy, I need to have one stall space on either side of me. And then I need to close my eyes. That's the only way I can piss in a stall. Otherwise,
that's
I have
really
to.
Really inconvenient.
Or what do you call it? At a urinal. At a stall, I'm fine. At a stall, I'm fine. If there's a closed door, I'm good. But I'm just saying, like, I can't imagine being so scared that I have, like, a nice, like, if that pee-pee comes out of my pee-pee real fast. That pee-pee come out of my pee-pee. Why are we the most childish?
I did actually used to nervous piss when I was a kid.
Yeah,
like piss my pants. Like it was always during during flashlight tag or during hide and seek.
Sure.
When I thought
sure.
someone was gonna get me, and it was like you had to be really quiet. I'd pee my pants every time. So yeah. I think I really do identify with this episode.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just like I find it effective to see someone pissing themselves because it's number one. It's like. Well, that's nice. It sounds good to just like be able to let the pee out. I just, what can I say? Shy bladder.
Yeah,
but,
for me, it's just a big turn on. You know, anytime I see someone peeing themselves in fear, like, you know, my mouth waters a little.
Yeah, just a little bit of drinked up pee. All right. this is a family friendly podcast. Anyways, so we open up with, you know, Chris is in the hospital.
Right.
And
so. Yeah, like I did want to say about this episode. I mean, the beginning of the episode when it's got all the supernatural stuff, I was already basically like pre-groaning because I feel like anytime you get invested in like an Irish or an Italian tour, you know they're going to have at least one stinker about like Catholic guilt and it's going to be like very some very like Catholic centric thing that like honestly I don't I don't really give a shit about. Like I love Scorsese, but then I try to watch Silence and it's just like 3 hours of him just fucking guilting us over and over again where it's like I get it, you guys got issues with religion. So I thought that's what we're getting, and we kind of did through the first part of the episode, but then it won me over when Polly ended up trying to collect from God, which I thought was it turned the whole episode around for me.
Yeah, and for me, I feel like what I loved about this. I mean, I guess I see what you're saying with regards to you know, Catholic guilt and Catholicism in this episode, but I thought that for the most part, it introduced a lot of character traits in several Sopranos characters that kind of live on throughout the series. And, like this to me is the first episode where you see Paulie Walnuts and you see his like superstitiousness, like superstitious Paulie is best Paulie.
Right.
That's also
you see him shirtless and not bad.
Yeah.
And you see him with a girlfriend, which is something that I don't think you've seen
from Scrubs.
Yeah, it's a lady from Scrubs, right?
The actress who plays, oh God, I gotta do that. She's from The Thing with The Other Thing. And
yeah,
The Thing.
She's from The Thing. She's from the whatchamacallit. But yeah, I thought that was, I don't really think we see much of like Paulie in a sexual light in the show. I mean, you know, he'll like hang out at the Bing and stuff.
She seems very unbimbo like for someone who'd be dating Paulie.
Yeah, that's a good point. It gives like, an interesting perspective in terms of like what Paulie's life was at this point in the show, which was that like he had a girlfriend but not a wife and was taking care of her kids with her. But anyways, I mean, I thought that was kind of like That's not consistent with the Pauly that we know from the rest of the series, but the superstitious Pauly, the one who's afraid of like cats sleeping on you and sucking your soul out and shit like that. Like, this is the Pauly that I love. And so yeah, let's get into it. So Chris wakes up from almost dying in the hospital from getting shot. And he calls in Tony and Pauly, and because he's the first people he wanted to see after he got out of the coma. And he basically tells him about a vision that he had. And we have some audio from that.
I saw the tunnel and a white light. I saw my father in hell. Get the fuck out of here. And the bouncer said that I'd be there too when my time comes.
What bouncer?
The Emerald Piper. That's our hell. It's an Irish bar where it's St. Patrick's Day every day forever. Mikey Parmisi and Brendan Fallone were there too. They were friends. They were playing dice with two Roman soldiers and a bunch of the Irish guys. And the Irish, they were winning every roll.
This is
the worst version of the Wizard of Oz ever. And you were there? And yeah. You?
Yeah. Everyone I've ever killed was there, and also the Irish. Yeah, it's
you know you're in hell when the Irish start winning at gambling.
Exactly, exactly. And it was even, what was it called? The Emerald Bar?
Piper.
What was
the Emerald Piper?
The Emerald Piper. Yeah, so this dream is explained and not seen, which is something that I think was a good choice on Michael Imperioli's part. No, I can't. That's the thing. Is like the Sopranos kind of. I mean, they innovated the like prestige TV dream sequences. Like everyone's copied dream sequences from The Sopranos ever since, and I'm really glad this one was just explained because to visualize it, it's stupid, and I can't imagine
I also thought it worked well because at first I thought that was just like Chrissy's gallows humor, which that'd be a pretty funny joke where he's like, yeah, of course nothing happened, but he tells him, you know, yeah, I went to hell. It was St. Patrick's Day every day, and the Irish are always winning at gambling. I thought that was just going to be like his joke, which would have been a good joke.
It would have been a good,
was really humorous. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been a good joke had he just been joking. And it's an even better joke, the fact that it's like real, or at least real to him. Like in terms of a dream sequence, it's very Guys and Dolls. I don't know if you guys are a big musical crowd, but it's just like, it's very theatrical. It's like people that he's whacked, or people who he knows that have been whacked at an Irish bar playing with Roman soldiers. It's very like, sit down, you're rocking the ball. Yeah. Like it's a very good.
They could have had Ralph DeMeo's and the Technicolor, or the Techno Leather Dream Coat.
Techno Leather Dream Coat.
From last episode.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. But yeah. And
can I ask a question?
Oh, yes, please.
So I, of course, have not watched the show in a long time. I just tuned into this episode for the podcast. But is this the how Christopher gets addicted to morphine?
No, well, he has been already.
Oh, okay.
Wait, has he been doing heroin already? I don't think so.
Yeah, he was in the Italy episode. He was all nodding out.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So he definitely had already been doing opiates. But what was great about it was the fact that like he was fucking while when Carmela comes to visit him in and he just and she starts saying that like you've had a vision from the other side, and he's just pressing the morphine drip button over and over.
It's so funny. It's like it's really fun to watch because it makes a lot of sense to me. It's also makes me wonder, do they still let you do that in the hospital?
They did let me do that the last time I was in the hospital. Well, they do this,
I feel like.
They do this dumb thing where they ask you like, what is like what level of pain you have on a scale of 1 to 10, which is kind of bullshit because you're like,
or the smiley faces.
Yeah.
It was for me. It was like on a scale of 1 to 10, which was obnoxious because then I had to figure out what number I had to say in order to get the actual like morphine drip and not just like,
right. You're like the
you
morphine
have to
number,
remember
please.
Every time you've been in pain before that yeah. and compare yeah. it to
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and there it's yeah. always it's yeah. always introduced really dumb. They're like, you know, if one is like a stub toe and 10 is getting your head cut off, and I'm always kind of like,
I've never
like,
had my head cut
I've
off.
I've never had my head cut off. Head, I don't think it would
and
hurt
also,
that much.
And, it would be painless yeah, because like, it would destroy your central nervous system. You should have said that to him. First of all, in fact, that's probably the real test. The real yeah. test is if you actually them when they say 10 is getting your head cut
then
off,
you're
that means
you're definitely not getting it.
Then you're definitely not getting it because they're like, oh, you're very cognizant right now. Someone yeah. who's in a lot of pain wouldn't be so snarky.
On a number from 1 to 10, what level of pain are you at right now? And you say, owie.
I'm horny. That's so dumb.
horny.
I'm horny. I'm that pain. I'm that level of pain. Yeah, so this isn't the first time that Chris has been shown to, you know, be addicted to opiates, but it still this episode does introduce the fact that Polly is a superstitious person. I think it's the first
and
episode.
It
in which,
also introduces
really
like
that.
The existence of the supernatural spirit world.
It yeah. does, but I think we'll get into that in a second. What I love about this episode, I think, is Polly's journey that is completely based on this one thing. He's got nothing else going on in this episode but this obsession with Chris's vision. Mm-hmm. And at one point he tries to say, hey, you know, it's not hell because it wasn't hot. It's purgatory.
Nope, nobody had horns.
Nobody had horns and it wasn't hot.
I love his mathematical approach to belief in the afterlife.
Oh, it's fantastic. I wrote it down because I thought it was so good. It was like, you add up all your mortal sins and multiply that number by 50. Then you add up all your venial sins and multiply that by 25. Then you add them together and that's your sentence.
And you'll be in purgatory for 6,000 years. But then 6,000 years is like 2 days to people on Earth. It goes like eternity goes by a lot faster.
Yeah, right.
In purgatory.
Not to mention, as we know from Goodfellas, you know, wise guys don't go to the same prison that everybody else goes to. Like, they're going to be, they have their own section of purgatory where,
oh,
like, one
true.
Guy makes the meat on a high, he does the steaks on a hot plate, and they're going to be bringing in lobsters. And then the one guy's going to have the razor to cut the garlic up that liquefies in a little bit of oil, which is a very good system.
I really do love that. Like, Polly looks through everything through the lens of being in the mafia. Like, not just, yeah, like the number one, thinking of purgatory as just like it's prison time that you can do on your head. It's like, hey, listen, as long as I'll do 6,000 years, you know, that's not a problem at all,
yeah,
you know,
because like God is the ultimate judge.
Yeah, something. Yeah, God
judge
is the
Judy.
Only judge. Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
And then he also looks at fucking, he looks at the Catholic Church in the same way where it, like, he's looking at them
he's doing a collection.
It's like he's doing a collection or I can't tell if he's doing a collection or the Catholic Church is
yeah,
the
no,
one
he's,
who's like,
yeah, no, you're
extorting.
Right. Yeah. Like he has paid the Catholic Church protection money. And that's why he doesn't yes. understand why, you know, all
so
these.
The Catholic Church is like a spiritual mafia.
Yes,
it really is. I mean, that's and, exactly yeah. what it is. And that, you know, is definitely in terms of our, you know, the real gangster section of this podcast, like who's the real gangster. I would definitely say the Catholic Church is the real gangster in this episode.
Yeah.
Because
he didn't give a shit. He didn't give a shit that he was like pulling out. He's like, you'll never see a cent from me again. He's just like, you'll be back.
Yeah. You'll be back.
Yeah.
He even says, actually, I have a clip from it. It's called Polly's Priest. Play that for us.
3 years of donations to your parish. And this is what this guy sees hanging over me.
You should have never gone to a psychic. It's divination. It's the devil. psychics are heretics and thieves who practice witchcraft. There's no validity to anything he told you.
Maybe, but irregardless, I should have had immunity to all of this
shit. Love that.
I should have been covered by my donations.
You should have come to me first, and none of this would have happened.
It's too late. You've been slacking off on me, and you left me unprotected. I'm cutting you off for good. You ain't never going to see another dime from me.
Yeah, that priest is just like when Beansy, when Richie Aprile thinks that Beansy went to Tony and not him. He's like, what are you going to him for? This is my turf.
And not only that, but it's also...
You're going to go see a psychic? No, I don't think so.
It's also what the Godfather says to Bonacera in the opening of Godfather 1. Is like, why didn't you come to me first? You know, why did you go to the police? It's the Catholic Church is basically doing spiritual extortion on Pauly.
That's true. My favorite thing about Polly's bargaining with himself over whether or not Christopher actually saw hell was when he was saying like it's hot. No, it wasn't hot. It was like when you go to WebMD and convince yourself you didn't get herpes.
Yeah,
you're just like, okay, so I don't have this. So yeah, it's not that. Like,
did you?
Or it's like,
I have a sore, but I haven't had any muscle aches.
Yeah.
So.
It's like coronavirus a little bit. Like I look at that, mm-hmm. and then
which,
it's like,
by the way,
okay,
is like the most worthless chart ever. It's like every single symptoms is like corona. Sometimes people have that. Like it's like the most inconclusive chart of all time.
Yeah. It's My favorite is like a dry cough. I'm like, what the fuck is a dry cough?
Yeah, it's weird.
I've
because
I've never had one of those.
I've definitely
it's
gone
the
down some
of those fruity coughs. You know, it's got like a nice alcoholic finish.
Yeah, a nice nice wet cough. No, like I've gone down the rabbit hole of WebMD before, and I've noticed that it's like there's just only so many symptoms that actually the human body can exhibit. It's like, it'd be nice if they were more specific. It'd be like, oh, listen, if you've got scabies, you'll know because you'll have, your skin will break out in swastikas.
Yeah, it should be like identifying a spider. It's like, well, did you have a red hourglass shape on your thorax? If not, then it's probably not poisonous.
Yeah, exactly. But... yeah, it's definitely interesting watching him bargain. It's interesting watching Polly's where Polly's head goes, and the fact that because Pauly is someone who's superstitious, but he also is like of the modern world, so he believes in science, and he believes in science so much that it actually convinces him that Chris's vision was real. Because of the fact that he was clinically dead for a minute.
Yeah.
And he has one of my favorite lines ever, which I have an audio for.
Which Polly's freaking out?
Polly's freaking out.
How much can you believe in dreams?
Christopher did not have a dream. A dream I make my peace. He was dead. Science said he was dead. Science.
He's got respect for science, but not so much respect that it in any way hurts his belief in ghosts. And that's like the perfect, that's like the perfect place that you want to be that level of Pauly gangster where you're just like, hey, listen, if science says he's dead. And therefore he met Jesus Christ and he met the devil. It's very Pauly of him. And
I feel
only,
like,
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I feel like that scene kind of inspired the Nick Kroll sketch about like they were kind of Guido Italian guys who were ghost hunters. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it, but that sounds
amazing.
Oh my
God, it's so funny. You got to see it. But now that I think about it, I feel like this storyline really inspired that sketch.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I do feel like the show in general... and maybe the show was the first people they couldn't have been the first people to realize that anyone with a Guido accent talking about spirituality is inherently funny.
I think Italians just tend to be superstitious, especially Sicilians. So it's kind of I think that's just, you got to address it at some point, you know?
Well, I think if you're a criminal and you still haven't like gotten in permanent trouble for what you've done, you probably have to be superstitious.
Yeah, that's true. There's part of you.
The fact that you still haven't gotten caught, like there's something else is at work here. Not just that the system is broken. It's just like.
In this episode, we basically find out that, you know, like the psychic is real and Polly has some the ghosts of the people that he killed chasing him around. But I did think Tony's explanation for why he believes it's not real was really good. Surprisingly insightful for Tony, I thought, when he, you know, he's trying to convince Polly that it's all fake. And he's like, did you have a steak today?
And he's What was that about?
I forget the steak line. Repeat that one for me.
He's basically asking if he eats steak because, like, if he lived in India, like, would be hell worth. Like, he's basically making an argument for moral relativism and, like, cultural specific definitions of sin, which, pretty insightful for Tony, I thought.
But I think
Tony's the king of bargaining, though, as we know from his therapy session. Like, he could bargain anything out of his own mind. So
right, yeah.
He's definitely self-serving for sure.
It's always self-serving. Yeah, like,
because the ghosts are real. Like that's the thing about this show. Like we were talking about earlier, there is a supernatural element to the show now, where there could be a spinoff. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. it's very true. It could just be a spinoff of this one. Psychic who exists in the show.
I think it's just the Long Island Medium. I think that's the spin-off.
Oh, that's true. That's true. He's basically the original Long Island Medium.
I do have.
He's just Edie Falco. Like, it's him dressed as Edie Falco. That's what the Long Island Medium is.
Yeah. I do have a clip of Polly at the psychic's place, which I thought was a very good scene.
Oh, yeah.
You're with your son? The fuck? I don't got no kids. Oh, Sonny. Pagano? Kind spirit. Is your name Sonny? Charles Pagano.
How the fuck do you know that?
He says he was your first. But I feel many more.
Hey!
That one's laughing. Poison ivy? He wants to know if it still itches.
Don't fuck with me. Who you been talking to?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Fuck you and this bullshit. That's what this is, you know. Satanic black magic. Sick shit.
Throw that chair.
To leave, sir.
Yeah? Fucking quiz!
You talk about the ultimate fucking like Italian mobster defense mechanism is to be like,
this is
Satan. This is Satan. Everyone's gay. that's the only way you could just someone needs to explain that psychic to me, and it never gets explained.
Because it's real.
It's like
they came back around and we find out the psychic is actually an FBI agent, and that is part of the way they're like infiltrating the mob, as they got this guy to pose as a psychic to reveal all the stuff they know from a wire.
It's genius, because it absolutely would work, and if that isn't how all mobsters since 1990 have been caught, I would be surprised, because that would work. You absolutely could get a bunch of like Italian, New Jersey, especially like housewives to like let a psychic come in, and they'd be like, okay, do you know where such and such is? And then you just admit everything to him, and then boom, you got
him. That's seems how like the a good Long Island Medium started out. She's actually in the FBI.
You're fucking with me, right?
No, that's a joke, but.
Okay, I thought you were fucking with me, because
sounds
if you told
a little
me,
true. Like
it
that's
sounds
why that's weird.
Believable. It does sound believable, But yeah, that is my absolute favorite scene. Probably, definitely of the episode, probably in this season. It is such a funny fucking Pauly scene, and it really sets up Pauly as being like, he was already, you know, like at this point in the series, up there as one of those characters you really like to watch, but he's one of the favorite. Anytime there's a Pauly episode, you get excited.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that started, I think, after this one, because that
and
is...
And he's also kind of sexy. Who knew?
He is hot. He is hot. He's got
kinda
like...
hot.
The way is, he's got the like the
he's
gray
a winged,
wings
a winged
in his
fox.
Hair. He really is, and you know, strong. So he's like a strong, like a bull. Mm-hmm. He's a hot little man, and
he's got
filled with like.
And he was nice
conflicts.
To that lady's children.
He was. That's the thing.
Very
he's a,
sweet.
He's a multi-layered character. He's
By the
got
way,
layers.
The actress that played his love interest for the episode, which I'm not sure if you continue seeing her, but she's really great.
I don't
Judy
think
Reyes.
So. Judy Reyes, yeah, from Scrubs. Yeah, and
yeah.
She's
also in Claws.
She's in Claws.
Sure.
I haven't
love,
seen
love
Claws.
That one.
Claws is fun.
I haven't seen it. It seems nice. I like...
that's the
I
one
like
with
the,
that's the one with Tim Allen, right?
What? You're thinking... Oh, I got it. Thinking of the Santa Claus.
Oh,
very good.
That's the Santa Claus. Oh, dang.
Very
yeah.
good. That is a solid
hilarious.
Joke, dude.
It's You're... the show with Niecy Nash. It's very uh-huh. good. Everyone watch it.
Right, everyone's so got like long nails.
Should we do favorite scene, least favorite scene now?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, my favorite scene is the psychic scene. I feel bad for like taking it, but that's going to be mine. What about yours, Vince? Favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take the coda to that, which is Pauly thinking, you know, the church is a protection racket.
What about you, Emily? You have a favorite scene?
I liked all of the scenes with Drea De Matteo.
Yes.
I think she's so beautiful.
She's gorgeous, and
she's a beautiful crier. Like, yes. Just such a good crier. Just like her eye makeup didn't fucking budge, but her
yeah.
face was just like blotchy. She was so sad, and she was getting hugged by everybody. Everybody was like constantly in a circle hugging her.
Yeah,
and it was like, look at all these big dudes. How lovely is that?
And she's a really great actress.
She really is. I like her a lot.
She did win an Emmy for, I can't remember if it's
she
this
did,
season.
For supporting yeah. actress.
It's got to be like fifth or sixth season without getting into spoilers. But yeah. she is fantastic, and it's it definitely is the first time so far for her character that you really see her range as an actress, because she's kind of up until this point she's just kind of like a pissy girlfriend.
And you wonder if she's playing herself, because like her name is Drea and she's playing a girl named Adriana. You're like, oh, did they just like will just use her real life? You kind of think that she's just that person and they put her in the show.
No, I think it was the opposite, because a lot of suits in Hollywood are fucking dumb.
Right.
And the name was already that. And then she walked in, they were like, oh, your name's Drea. What a fucking coincidence.
Yeah.
Ooh. Fucking idiots.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's the mark of someone who's like a very talented actor is when they can like, when they can fool you into thinking, oh, that's just who this actor is.
Well,
this
she's
isn't
also
a character.
Just fascinating and graceful to watch. She's
oh yeah.
Also, every scene with Edie Falco, it's
oh,
it's those bangs.
Amazing.
God damn it! Her hair is so beautiful, and then the bangs.
Yeah, yeah. The bangs exist, like... and you just have to deal with it because of it's you know what? It's the year 2000, but it was filmed
it's
in
awful.
The 90s.
It's so awful, and it's. I mean, it. I guess it does make the character, but it makes me like hate her a little
it
bit.
It dates
more.
The character, which I think is a perfect segue into
yeah,
our
that's
segment.
True.
It's the 90s. Vince?
You gotta cue me up, man. All right.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
You're my butterfly, sugar. 90s. So. In terms of 90s-ness in this episode, I think you're correct that I see her bangs, Edie Falco's bangs, as kind of 90s bangs. It's like there was a,
no.
I mean, is you don't agree?
No, I don't know who the fuck ever had that hair. Like, it's it is a concoction that somebody else, like, it is the anti, like, the anti-hero to the Rachel.
Sure, sure, sure. It's yeah, like the it's the New Jersey Rachel.
It just the thing that sucks though is that the rest of her hair is so beautiful and perfect and luxurious, and then those fucking bangs are just like, they're like, they look like they're made of steel too.
Yeah.
They look like they're sharp, like they would pierce your eyeball if you fell asleep
using gel.
In the
Maybe
wrong
she was
way.
Using gel. I used to use really good hair gel that would make you. I used to have spiky hair.
Yep, you have ice spiker.
It wasn't ice, but it was like, I think it was called like American Crew or something like that, or like American Bod. It was something where it was like, it had America on it. And I was like, yeah, I'm American.
Toby
I'm
Keith.
Gonna stab people with my head.
Toby Keith sang the theme song in the commercial.
Yeah. Your American hair. I'll put a boot in your ass, Osama.
I think that the lead singer of Sugar Ray would sing that.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. 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 But so maybe not the bangs. I was shoehorning that. But in terms of 90s stuff, I would say AJ definitely took the cake in this episode. Number one, in the hospital, he's playing a Game Boy Color, I believe. And number two, in bed, when he is sulking in his room, he is reading Paintball Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. That was my favorite part.
That is the first thing my boyfriend noticed, and I like wasn't looking at it at all, and he noticed it, and I was like, what the fuck would you read that for?
I mean, is there words? That's the question.
No. You know what he was really looking at? He was looking at porn inside of the paintball.
No, I think he was actually looking at paintball. I think he was checking out the latest models.
Or Mad
paintball.
Magazine.
Yeah. I think that Paintball Magazine, I think it's both. It's a mixture of porn and paintball guns. So it's
it's
titties.
Like, it's the bitches
paint.
From Deer Hunter before they did the Deer Hunter are doing paintball magazines. Like,
exactly. Bam. That's exactly right.
Hold on. Are you saying, Matt, are you saying that you didn't have a paintball gun in the 90s?
I didn't. I had a BB gun because paintball was something that like would have required you to go out somewhere. And going outside was illegal in my household. So, and if I had a friend who was going to take me paintballing, it would be one of those things where I would have to... I would have to lie to my parents about what I was doing. And at that age, I was too scared to lie.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until high school when I was okay with lying to my parents about what I was doing. And at that point, paintballs, no one did it anymore. Paintballs in LA, kind of got replaced by high school with drugs.
Right. Well, also, like, you just, you know, you grew up in the city, whereas I grew up in the country where there was no, like, you didn't have to go somewhere to go paintball. You just walked outside, and then
you'd have to go to a place where they like strategically put things of hay, and then you would shoot near them.
In my town, you know, you could just go to your friend's house whose dad had like an abandoned car, and you'd like hide behind like the car that's in the yard, like the junk car. He has, you know, they got a couple of junk cars that you could hide behind and use as a base. And
think that the Paintball Weekly was kind of a foreshadowing idea that he might become a hitman one day?
I mean, I think there was part of it was like, it was just showing the doughiness of the character because he basically, and that's kind of a theme in the episode too, is the fact that like Tony, his only son is this pudgy, clumsy, kind of like emo, or I guess at the time it wasn't considered emo, just like a nu metal kid who, he wasn't interested in like fucking guns so much as he interested in paintball and N64, you know, like his kid was a product of the 90s. And so he just feels so much shame about the fact that like this kid is going to, in his mind, amount to nothing.
Well,
you know?
I think it's also, he sees all his worst traits reflected back at him. One of which is you know, he's kind of doughy and unathletic. But I also think Tony in junior high would definitely have played paintball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes you wonder how he and Big Pussy managed to wrangle that buff dude into a shed.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
I guess a gun will do it. Yeah. But why doesn't that guy have a gun? Shouldn't that guy always have a gun, too? How does that fucking work?
He looked like he had been pre-beaten up. So I imagine some more in-shape goons jumped him, beat him up, and then handed him off. That was my guess.
Maybe, but yeah, I guess. I guess it was when he was talking to Big Pussy or whatever, he was like, call off the other guy. It's just you and me. So,
right, but I think that was specifically for the murder, right? He was we want to be the ones who kill him.
The guy, the heroin addict and his buddies maybe beat him up to, you know, curry favor. He's got all these young kids trying to curry favor with him because they want to be in Da Mafia, so.
Yeah, yeah, everyone wants to be, in Da Mafia, and, some people don't make it through. What can you do? But it brings us to the storyline.
Wait, but we haven't said least favorite scenes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Least favorite. My least favorite personally was the Melfi talking to her therapist scene. Because of the fact that, like, they do this a lot with Melfi's character where it's like, she and Tony will have a scene together that kind of, where there's a lot of nuance and you can kind of read into the individual characters' motivations. And then whenever they bring in Melfi's therapist, they double up on psychiatry. So now they're just explaining what that scene was about.
Right,
and
yeah.
I don't need
that.
It's
like the director's commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny because that part I didn't mind so much. I just thought he was such a fucking little dweeb. He was like, I feel for you at the end. It's like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Why don't you try being you think that you're above me as a therapist just because you're my therapist? Suck a dick. You fucking suck.
Yeah.
Peter Bogdanovich consistently over here. Yeah. He consistently sucks. That's the thing about her therapist is that you keep seeing him throughout the series less and less, but I do feel like every time he's there, he's just there to hear what Melfi has to say and then like shit on her life and her life choices.
Yeah,
that's what it seems like. And she's like, and I've been drinking, and I'm like, who doesn't?
Yeah, yeah, right. everyone drinks. Yeah,
no, yeah. I do.
But it's like, no, it's true though. It's like the idea that she has a problem with drinking or whatnot and all that, to me, is just like, it's extra. It's too much extra for this character, who I think she does enough on her own with the scenes with Tony. I don't need you to tell me her backstory with regards to her problems.
My favorite thing about her, and I of course haven't watched the show in a while, is that her allure and her like steely nature of,
oh yeah,
of her keeping it together during these while also challenging him is, mm-hmm, is really great. She's a great character. I just need a backstory on her.
I mean, it's not that like she can't have a backstory. It's that like,
because the way they do it.
It's like, because of the fact that like her problems tend to be like her issue with her son at one point, or the fact that like, you know, she drinks a little bit too much wine and then
her issues
it's literally
are like, they're like boring intellectual issues. That's the reason we watch shows about mobsters, because we don't want to deal with those.
And literally every scene that she has with her therapist is him eventually just saying, well, you should stop seeing him, for the whole series. The entire series is just the same scene repeated over and over again. It's almost like the fucking Room, where it's like Tommy Wiseau just shot one sex scene and then reused that multiple times. They should have just shot one scene of just, you know, what
and
is his name?
Am I Peter remembering this correctly? Was he wearing sunglasses indoors, or do I just remember him wearing sunglasses?
Are you talking about
indoors?
Tommy Wiseau or
no,
the therapist?
No, the therapist.
I think he just has big eyeglasses.
He has very big glasses.
He has transition lenses or something.
He could have had transition at that time. It was very popular to have transition lenses.
It still is on some weirdos too. I'm like,
yeah, but transition lenses are better now, because there was a time where transition lenses at rest, when they were supposed to be non-sunglasses, still had a little tint, and it was like Very
they're
lame.
For fucking little dweeb bitches, and no one should have them. Like, no, they're gross.
I think they're cool. They're cool though. No, I'm
just
saying,
wear another pair of sunglasses on top of your glasses, like the rest of us.
That's what I do. Yeah. I have the things that flip up, like
gabagool.
When you're on the beach and you see some titties, you just flip. that's what I
actually. Have. I would really love those sunglasses from A Different World, where he had the like.
Oh yeah.
The flip one. Oh,
Dwayne Wayne.
I would die.
Yeah.
I
so
would
cool.
Die for those. Die for those. But can I tell you another one of the scenes that almost made me cry?
Oh please.
So in the scene where he's like where Tony is apologizing to his pudgy son.
Yeah. Yes.
And we see the paintball magazine. He's reading it, and he brings in a pizza, and he goes, "I'm not hungry." I was like, "What?"
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that
he's
was.
He's bringing you pizza. You like the pizza. Why won't you eat the pizza? And then at the very end of the scene, he almost said no to the pizza again. I was like, "Come on, you little shit! Eat the pizza." Like,
yeah, you know you want the pizza. You fat
I know,
fuck.
And the pizza looks so good. And Tony was gonna eat it with him, and then Tony couldn't eat it. He had to go kill somebody.
Yeah.
I was like, look at that restraint. That's
yeah.
He's got
that
priorities.
Is restraint. Yeah, he's like.
I don't think I could do that. I think I'd be like, after I've eaten half of this pizza with my son.
Yeah, okay? I would reschedule the murder for like 2 hours from then, so I could eat the pizza, enjoy like an episode of Downton Abbey, and then digest. And then I would have murdered.
Well, what I would have done, which is a terrible, like horrible writing, would be him turning to Carmela and going, "Do we have paper plates and a couple paper towels so I could take this to go? I gotta go." Like, just gotta, you got any crushed red pepper in the packet? I need that.
I would definitely enjoy watching just the scene of Tony ripping open those little like crushed red pepper and then also Parmesan cheese and trying to like get it all out, just shaking on it.
Yeah, that's good right there.
I feel if that hasn't happened in a scene in The Sopranos, it feels like it has. It should have.
It should also be like Big Pussy is taking, like he brought a couple for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's dabbing the pizza with a paper towel like a fucking bitch.
Yeah.
And then Tony goes, "What the fuck is that? What is that?
Yeah,
don't do
that."
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I bring you pizza. I bring
the
you
grease
pizza.
Is the best
this
part
is how
of the
you
pizza.
Repay me.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right. Also, and we have to just, you know, get into these real quick. You know, the entire storyline of Carmela, you know, wanting Tony to have a vasectomy is, I thought, as like a B story, works really well.
Yeah,
like,
that's a good B story.
I was thinking about like the last episode. In the last episode,
I got it tested for AIDS.
Yeah, which by the way is another very 90s thing. The fact that it was like, I got my guma tested for AIDS. Back then, everyone
was
getting.
That's all you could get.
Everyone was getting their girlfriends tested for AIDS. It was a thing. But like the previous episode, it just feels like it's filled with B stories that just like people dropped and threw away. And this episode, it really is like, yes, see, this is an episode of The Sopranos. This is like where they like they picked a B story that not only is incredibly entertaining and something that you kind of care about, but it also pertains to the story in general, where it ties in the religious aspect, the fact that Carmela is like praise to God that Chris Moltisanti makes it through the shooting. And then he does. And then she thinks like she has this connection with God now. That's like, you know,
makes her
like
fuck.
And it makes her want to fuck a little, but it also makes her feel like she is more connected, more spiritual. And so she brings that in to the conversation with Tony about him getting a vasectomy, which I have a clip for Vince. It's called God's Creation.
The Pope doesn't even believe in Trojans, and you want me to get snipped. Isn't that a little bit hypocritical?
Look, Tony, I'm thinking of my family first. That's all.
Well, whatever's down here, it's God's creation. Isn't it a sin to undo the good work he's done?
Well, you should know. You made a living of it.
You're unfucking believable, you know that? What the fuck you doing? You had dinner an hour ago. What the fuck are you doing to yourself?
Tony, leave him alone.
I'm supposed to get a vasectomy when this is my male heir?
That is, I'm supposed to get a vasectomy when this is my male heir, is maybe the most brutal thing a father has ever yeah. said to a son.
That was amazing.
Yes.
In the history of fatherdom. Like, that
I
is,
will say, very quick manipulation there, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and but the thing is, he has been stewing on that for like a while. You know, he's been thinking about the shower.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He's like, eh, the Pope doesn't want you. You even use a condom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of, he like thought about that he was like ready to do the, uh-huh. It's like he had workshopped it at a couple of open mics and then he was like ready for the show.
Right. Yeah, no, he was definitely ready to make the argument that God doesn't want him to have a vasectomy, which is, it's the level of manipulation and bargaining that you do expect from Tony Soprano. And then just to decide to completely throw his own son under the bus in order to drive the point home. Like, I can't get a vasectomy. My son is a dumbass. Like, we have to preserve the sperm to make a better son. It's just, oh, fucking A, dude. Yeah.
And so, his son's so cute, too.
I know.
His little face and his, oh, he's a good actor, that kid, too. Well, he doesn't act anymore. I guess he's a professional poker player now. Sure.
Well, you know, it's, it's a career, but it definitely, he
was good.
They cast the perfect kid. They cast the perfect kid. It's like, he reminds me so much of myself in the 90s. Like,
yeah.
Just nu metal, fucking, you know, skateboarding, reading paintball magazine.
It's true. I identify with him a lot too. Like, it just felt like in the 90s we were all made to feel like such disappointments.
It's true. And we like those of us who like listened to Marilyn Manson were a very specific type of kid, and then like later turned to Korn, and then later turned to Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it all started with the gateway drug, which is South Park.
Yeah, and that's then, true. Yeah.
And then it turned to Marilyn Manson and then to Korn.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, like the character even kind of like, I mean, this is later in the season, so we won't give too much away, but he changes with the times in the same way that I did, especially like the post 9/11, you know, you get the internet and you start, you know, looking at like, Al Jazeera and like videos from the war, and you're just like, what if I join, you know? And like, this is
he'd be into Gamergate. Like, he later would like,
right, if it were today, he would be like a 4chan kid, and he would be like, he'd get in trouble at school because he was drawing swastikas on people's like lockers and shit.
Yeah, he would.
He's definitely a classic shit poster.
He's a classic shit poster.
Whereas if he were a little nu metal girl, he would have gotten into hentai porn.
Yeah. Who's to say that he didn't? He was wearing a shirt that had a lot of, I think it was like Japanese writing on it when he was reading the paintball magazine.
He might be into manga.
He might
manga,
already.
Or however the fuck you pronounce it.
It's manga, manga, you know, potato, potato. But yeah. So, and then I think other than those things, I mean, at the end
can
of
can I bring
that,
up the almost sex scene and then the sex scene?
Yeah,
because that's...
Okay.
Because I was really bummed out that Polly didn't have a sex scene, because I was like, this guy's really cute and she's really cute and I love her in Scrubs. They're going to do this. And then I was like, this is wild.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do it. And I was like, ugh. And then at the end, Tony and Camilla did it. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that was gross. No. That was like watching your parents have sex. Like, that was, that was on my list, for the top of my list for least favorite scene. Cause first of all, like, it was like watching a slow motion car wreck where you're like, oh, okay, they're gonna fuck. And then you're expecting
them I was just
to
like,
cut. And then they just kept showing more things about it, more details. Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, their hands, their hands clasping each other.
Yeah. You see a lot of back meat. I don't need to see like back
meat.
Seeing like back meat over the age of 50 to me is like, it's you know, male or female, I'm not into looking at hands on back
meat.
I don't
think that's true. Like, it's the thing is, it's fine. It's just that I didn't like how they ended things with their arguments and how she just kind of gave in. And I think here's the thing. I think she just knew that he had to go kill someone.
Yeah. And so that's the question I have. Yeah.
He also did something very sweet for his son, and he was being very heartfelt and sweet with his son after the horrible thing he said to him. And
then he agreed. And then he agreed to do it.
Yeah.
To get the vasectomy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it's like, oh, he's the guy that I want him to be now. But right. I hate that because he's not going to be the guy you want. He's never going to be it. Like, it just makes you frustrated. And you're like, ugh, I don't want to watch them have sex.
You got to imagine that, like, in order to actually, like, not just date, but then marry and have children with, like, a mobster who is, like, an actual murderer. Like, a big part of staying in that relationship is that when they do things like murder or be mobster-esque, it just makes you horny. So you keep wanting to leave.
Is it that,
but then,
or is it because he tries? Is it because he comes home and he tries to compensate for that by, like, doing nice things for his son? And so she doesn't actually see the murder, but she sees him try to, like, atone for it.
I don't think
he was compensating, though. I think he genuinely felt bad.
Yeah, like, I do think he felt bad. I think he knew he would cross
even
some
he knew
sort of
he
line.
Crossed the line there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one line he felt that he had crossed the, like, pretty much the whole episode.
And, you know, he's like, listen, if I'm going to hell for any reason, it's not going to be all the murder and the cheating and the lying. It's going to be because I told my son that he was an insufficient human being and that I had to make another human male to be my heir. Like, that's something that where he's like, he can't even use the excuse of, like, everything I do for my family. It's like, no, you just emotionally destroyed your only son.
Imagining that his son is still sitting in his bedroom eating the pizza while they're fucking and the bed is, like, hitting his wall.
Just
and
eating
he's
it
like,
slowly.
He can hear it and he goes, they are making another.
Yeah. I like to think that he's just very, like, sullenly and sadly masturbating to the sounds of his parents having sex. That just sounds like what he would do.
And then he comes on the pizza and eats it like a seventh grade boy.
It's a very seventh grade boy. Hey, you know, you experiment a little bit. Nothing wrong
Everybody
with that.
Everybody tries to taste it at least once.
Hey, Limp Bizkit. All right.
That's what guys tell me.
That's, hey, you know what? We've all tried it. It's salty. So, moving on to our last bits, just for in terms of malapropism corner, I only noticed the doctor who was treating Chris calls him Mr. Moltisanto.
You didn't notice Vince, the most obvious one, which was Polly Walnut saying, irregardless.
Irregardless.
I guess
that's
so
classic
true to character that you almost forget that it is a malapropism.
And at this point, it's a word, right? Irregardless is just one of those things where it's like, now it's the same thing with for all intensive purposes. It's like, you know, sure, it's intents and purposes, but so many people say irregardless, so many people say intensive purposes that we know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it doesn't count. And yeah, that is that's the episode. All in all, I would say that you know, this is my first go around where I'm actually kind of paying attention to who the writers are, and the directors. And in terms of, like, every other podcast we've done so far of this podcast, sure, I've never named a single writer or director, but I will say that this one was Michael Imperioli, and I thought fantastic. It makes me want to see what are the other episodes that he wrote, because I think those might be pretty good too.
He's all right, Spider.
He's all right, Spider. He's very, very all right. So, yes, I loved the episode, and I'm excited for the next one. And you know what episode I loved even more than this episode? This episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Emily, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Good Mythical Morning occasionally.
Hell yeah.
You can also find me on Instagram at mflem.
At mflem.
No, it's mflemily. You guys,
mflemily.
This quarantine has fried my fucking brain. I'm not
it
kidding.
Is.
Does it?
Yeah, we're going to be stuck inside forever, dude.
Yeah, I know. And then my Twitter is at flemily emming. And then I do have a YouTube page. I plan to post things throughout this, but I don't know, man. We'll see.
It's weird when, like, yeah, even during quarantine, you're just like, I'm still not motivated. Like, I started a TikTok, and then I posted two videos of
I've
my cat.
I've got, like, three.
There's two videos, me just fucking around with my cat, and I was like, I'm gonna do this every day, and my cat's gonna be a fucking TikTok star.
No, no, no. Matt, I've watched those, and I love them.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Good. I should do more, but you know what? It's the same thing, where it's just like, what for? You know?
I know.
I'm fine.
I agree, too. And I also kind of just like the internet and trying to pursue the internet success or fame or whatever you want to call it. It just feels gross.
It does.
And sometimes you're just like, who the fuck am I? I don't fucking know.
Yeah. You know what? But I will say, you are the best Mythical crew member on Good Mythical Morning, and people love and respect you. Hey, I'm just saying that
that's not true. You and I are tied equally because we are the ones who bring the characters.
No, that's true. We do great food feuds. You know, they put us together, peas in a pod. We do well. But in general, I would say you're fantastic on this show. Everyone should check out Good Mythical Morning with Emily Fleming. That's what I'm calling it now. Good Mythical Morning with Emily Fleming. Email us any questions, comments, and concerns at fraughtcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/fraughtcast for all the bonus episodes of our movie podcast, in which we talk about everything. Vince, what is the Google Voice number so that people can leave some voicemails?
It's 415-275-0030.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And until next episode, don't stop believing.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.